You're on Energy Guru Radio. This is the Music Weekly. My name's Brad. It's a pleasure to have your company on your Friday, as always. Augie March are hitting the road again for three East Coast dates this autumn across Melbourne, Sydney and Canberra. Now, these shows are long awaited, having meant to take place some time ago, and they're all in vain to celebrate the slightly overdue 20th anniversary of their debut album called Sunset Studies. Now, drummer and vocalist of Augie March, Dave Williams, joins me now via Zoom to have a chat about these shows. Dave, how are you?
I'm well, that Brad, and you? I hope you're well too.
I am. Now, walk me through the story around these shows. I understand that the 20th anniversary was perhaps a couple of years ago. So I'm assuming the pandemic threw a spanner in the works there.
Of course, yes. We'd been tossing around the idea leading up to the 20th anniversary, and 2019, it sort of coalesced all the ideas. We got together, had a chat about how we wanted to maybe present it, and booked some really lovely rooms, like something a little different, you know, maybe a bit more of a theatre experience, you know, something that felt a bit more, you know, take you into a different world, because it was playing an album from start to finish. It doesn't happen often. You know, you might go and promote a record when you release it, but to do it in the track order, it's something that, you know, people would recognize those songs who had heard the album, but to do it live, yeah, we wanted to honor it in a way and make it an experience, you know, sort of full immersion, I guess would be the term that everyone uses now, a fully immersive experience to listen to this record and it be a 3D thing. The band is playing it in front of you, you know, and so we wanted to do that on the 20th anniversary and book some lovely rooms. And then Pando happened. We rebooked those rooms, and then third wave happened in 2021. We actually got one of the shows away in Melbourne, in the beautiful Melbourne Recital Centre. Mm. And we'd booked two nights for that. And literally the next night or the next day, lockdown, I think four happened.
Mm.
So, and we were supposed to fly to Canberra the following, you know, 2 days after that. And yeah, we were locked out of that. So yes, it's been definitely tough, you know. Look, it's not unusual. Everyone's experienced this disruption.
Mm.
But yeah, the Sydney show, we're really trying to find a date to and a venue, and we literally did those two things, and just fingers crossed now no one gets COVID before the show.
Because yeah.
The next night we play Canberra, and then, you know, we've got a little break, and then we actually play another show in Melbourne, because, you know, a lot of those people who missed the second show all the way back in May of 2021, we wanted to give them an opportunity to see it. So, Yeah, that's kind of it. And just, yeah, honouring these moments in your career, because it's something that, I guess, if you don't tell your own story, that story will disappear. That's something that I've sort of thought about and reflected on, and, you know, this is the Augie March song line, and we want to honour it.
It's interesting that you say that. The stories on the album, though, are recorded for in perpetuity, and people can listen to them at any time they like,
yeah.
And they have been for the last 20 years. It's been quite a treat to re-listen to these songs, you know, throwing myself back to a time where I was much younger and had a lot more hair. But I've noticed that even on things like YouTube, where you have uploaded some of the music videos from some of the tracks from the album, people are still interacting with the content. So people have carried these tracks with them in their music collections for 20 years. How does that feel as an artist, as someone who has created work that has such longevity?
It feels natural to be honest, that this is part of the reason why I got into a band, because I have those experiences with other artists. You put on an album, and it takes you back to that moment that you heard that album for the first time, or you remember a feeling. So to be able to say that I've been in a band and people have had similar experience, that's gratifying, definitely. But I love meeting people and hearing the stories, and we still hear people, people get married to songs of ours, there's played at funerals. It's definitely something that it's really a lovely thing to have, but I feel like culturally it's also something that we've been working hard at, making it a natural thing, because music should be part of everyone's life, but it shouldn't be like this sort of distant thing that you do outside of your normal life. It just should be integrated into it. And that's why, part of the reason I became a musician, I wanted it to be just a regular thing,
And one of the comments I was reading from someone who was listening to Heartbeat and Sales on YouTube, they said, "I used to listen to Sunset Studies at night with the lights off, drinking red wine." Mm. To me, it's Australia's best album. I love that comment, and I love how they're consuming your music. It's brilliant.
Something that, I think I have seen that comment, and it was, I remember distinctly doing something similar to maybe the last song on Pearl Jam's second record, sitting in my share house in 1994, drinking goon with all the lights off, staring out into the blackness of, it was dark. And so, it's nice to be, it's just literally another progression. We're another rung in a ladder. Whether that ladder's going, I'm not sure. Hopefully up to the moon, so you can. Rung in the music ladder.
Now, Sunset Studies was Augie March's debut album, appearing after the release of a couple of shorter works in the years prior. The album was apparently recorded in 9 studios with 6 different engineers sporadically between March and September 2000.
Our PR. I like this.
I've done my research. But look, walk us through making this album. What are some of the memories that stand out to you while you were making the record, and why all of this kind of stopped starting in that recording process?
Well, number one, we're not that organized. Not that organized. We'd booked some time with producer, with Paul McKercher at Sing Sing. Mm-hmm. And we'd got through to we'd finished maybe 4 songs, and then Paul had to leave and go back to Sydney. Mm. And I literally worked at a cafe, and one of the ladies who owned it went out with an engineer whose name was Chris Thompson. And I met him and I was like, "Tom, are you available next week to do some recording?" And he's like, "Yes," because he worked at the ABC. So we sort of just cobbled it together, and then we ran out of time at one studio, had to book some more time at a different studio. Tomo wasn't available, so we were scratching around looking for another producer, another engineer. Literally made it up as we went along. Mm-hmm. And then Glenn wrote a couple of extra songs. There Is No Such Place was written maybe 6 months after we started recording. It was one of the last songs recorded.
Oh, okay.
And that song, Rob Dawson, our dearly departed keyboardist, who was a really great friend of Glenn's, had joined the band. And Glenn had played him that song. They were really close friends. And Rob was like, "This is a bloody great song. I've written a piano part." So I really pushed Glenn. And that was why that song really got on the record, because Rob, said, "This is a great song." And him and Glenn did that together, did a duet in the studio. I think it was pretty much recorded live. Mm. Things were just sort of made up as we went along. We also had a very understanding label at the time. So Yeah, it was definitely made. Yeah, we sort of cobbled together whatever was available, and then when we felt like it was done, we let them know.
Yeah, right.
And they were happy to do that. Which, yeah, again, this is a very look. I have, you know, and just we had Richard Pleasance come in and play on Men Who Follow Spring the Planet Round. We got him to do that song after he did a wonderful job of the Waltz EP, which we had done at his studio, and he really brought some really interesting ideas to that. And Maroondah Reservoir, mm-hmm. depends on where you live. So yeah, ABC, we recorded at Sing Sing, which is now no longer in Richmond. The ABC studios recorded in Balaclava at, I can't even remember the name of it anymore. It was owned by Joe Camilleri for a while, that studio.
Oh, right.
The engineer, for a few days, he was an English guy who married an Australian lady, and he'd engineered Rum, Sodomy and the Lash.
Oh.
By the Pogues. And when we were blown, he was telling us stories about that. It was amazing. So very fond memories. There was times when we didn't know what we're, you know, there's still times when we don't know what we're doing, but we were literally trying ideas, throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something would stick up, you know, thinking, oh God, this song needs a bit more. And so definitely there's that aspect of our band that still exists. Mm. But yeah, it was naivete, the youth, or, you know, the energy of youth and naivete, and just giving everything a shot and not being too self-conscious, which can be the enemy of good art.
Yes, it can. I'm glad you brought up Paul McKercher. I don't know if you've heard from him, but he sends his best.
Macca, look, legendary. He's in the Augie March Hall of Fame.
Yes. Yeah, he's in his own Hall of Fame. He's a legend. I love him. But I was going to bring him into this conversation, but unfortunately he's caught up with young children and family life.
Well, look, we've enjoyed his company. He's endured ours. Amazing, you know, that he still takes our calls. Amazing.
tell me about – I'm curious because, I mean, I've only, you know, observed Paul in, you know, doing a few things here or there and working with him at SAE. But I'm interested to hear about what it was like working with him at the time, because the album won Engineer of the Year for Paul and the other engineers involved on the project. Yeah. So there was obviously something special going on there.
Yeah, well, he was a funny guy who was happy to try anything and humour these young dickheads who think they know everything. And he was just helped steward us in areas. And, you know, if you didn't think something was working, he'd tell you, and it'd just flat out be, you know, honest about things. And he was also that spirit of experimentation and exploration that we've kind of always had. He cultivated that as well. You know, that was fostered. And when we went to mix the record up in Sydney, we pulled songs apart and re-recorded them in the studio, and he was happy to do it and got involved in the recording of things as well. And that's his acoustic guitar on. That's him playing acoustic on Heartbeat and Sales at the start. That's him.
Yeah, right.
So, yep. Mm. And we re-recorded the whole front end of that song and grabbed, you know, the percussion start of that is a plastic suitcase filled with cutlery from the studio kitchenette, two bowls, one held by Adam, one held by Ed, and Glenn was hitting an empty water bottle and I was smacking the plastic suitcase for the snare drum.
Wow.
Just went in the studio and did that. Yeah.
Anyone would think you're buskers.
True that, yeah. Pretty much busking. That would be funny. I'd like to see that. That would be weird and hilarious, and everyone would be so self-conscious. What? You're not stopping? You're not going to watch us? What the hell? You got to go shopping? Okay, good.
I'd love to see how much money you get thrown at you. Other qualities you were talking about, the honesty and the experiment, the willing to experiment and the hands-on approach, I guess, with the artist and the material, is that a quality that a lot of engineers have, or is that something that's quite rare, do you think?
Well, it depends on how, you know, the terms of engagement that you book someone in with.
Right.
You know, whether you want someone to have an opinion, you know, or just be there to hit the record button.
Yeah.
And I love a good, you know, I really enjoy, I thrive on the collaboration aspect of band life. And we definitely booked Paul as a producer slash engineer. So his input was welcome. And I think we, you know, in my opinion, I think we do our best work when we have someone collaborating with us who can, you know, just say, no, I don't think that's a good idea, because everyone can get in their own head and think their idea is the greatest and, you know, follow through their vision. And but I think our best work we've done has been in collaboration with others, be that Richard Pleasance, be that Paul McKercher, be that Eric, I actually can't remember his name, he produced One Crowded Hour. Like, yeah, so there's definitely those tracks stand out to me, the ones where I hear true collaboration. Getting people who are the right fit for a band's personality, both individual and collective, it's tough. It's really hard. Try and find someone who gets along with everyone, five different people anywhere, let alone doing music where people are freaking nuts all about, you know, not life and death. This is my work, you know, like this is my life.
Mm.
It's hard work, and you've got to be really good at your job to be able to step your way through that. Paul's good at that. And I think great engineers who continue working are good at that. So, yeah, it takes a bit. Finding the right fit, sometimes it doesn't work, but you got to try.
Now, talking a little more about that period of time, the year 2000, I was looking at the ARIA charts for around the time that Sunset Studies was released. We had a lot of Kylie Minogue going on in the ARIA singles charts. Madonna was also topping the singles charts. And shortly after Sunset Studies was released, the Baha Men topped the ARIA charts with their hit single, Who Let the Dogs Out? You know, there's a lot going on for 2000.
Timeless. That is a timeless track.
Isn't it just? I guess my question is, why do you think Sunset Studies managed to cut through and carve its own little kind of niche, its path, despite being, I guess, against the grain, quite a different sound to what was, I guess, charting at the time?
Well, maybe because of that reason. Let's start with that reason alone. So it sounded a little different to, you know, mainstream, what was happening in the mainstream.
Mm.
Like, that's, you know, not entirely true. We were reacting to what was happening at the time as well. But that classic songwriting, that's a real strength of Glenn's, you know, and that, you know, that's really the foundation the band is built on. And so just over the course of those two, the preceding EPs, Glenn was refining his craft. We were refining our craft as a band. So it got to the point where there was a couple of really strong songs on that record that, you know, far be it from me to say, but that there's a timeless quality to them in that they could have been recorded in 1960. They could be recorded in 2002. You wouldn't really know the difference. It's not like you can place, you know, it's not really specific to a time. And, you know, that's another thing that I think the band has always strived for, to try and achieve a timelessness in the music and the songs that we produce and record. So we were lucky that we had support from Triple J.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, like, that's needs to be stated really clearly. Having a youth broadcaster that goes all around Australia is a blessing. You know, it's not something that happens all over the world either. We know that in America it's not like that. So having champions at you know, in our label, who then went out and spoke to their, you know, people at Community Radio Land, another big, you know, another thing that we had a lot of support from very early on, and then Triple J getting it out there, and then our fellow artists, our colleagues, people like Something for Kate, seeing us very early, asking us to support them at, you know, on a tour for their second EP, taking us to Sydney for the first time, taking us on tour for Beautiful Sharks all around Australia.
Mm.
Like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, it doesn't happen in a vacuum, this, you know, being able to continue to do this. There's five of us, but the people standing all the way behind us that have helped us there. Yeah, it is legion.
Let's get back to these live shows quickly before, because I've taken up way too much of your time already. The Sunset Studies Live 2022 shows will kick off at the Factory Theatre in Sydney on March 17th with Sally Seltman supporting, followed by Friday, March 18th at the Playhouse in Canberra Theatre Centre with Evan Buckley, and then Melbourne at the Croxton on Friday, April 1 with Sally Seltman again. You touched on it a little bit earlier in the chat, but I'm assuming that we can hear the entirety of Sunset Studies from start to finish.
Live and complete.
Live and complete. You mentioned that we're going for more of a kind of theatre vibe this time, an experience.
Well, yes, and I got a suit made for the for the show, so that's another fun thing. I put that to the boys. I was like, boys, do we want to, you know, get some suits made for this show? And it's quite a curt response, probably not for radio. And they're like, thanks, but no thanks. You can do that. So look, I got a nudie suit made with all iconography on it of the album.
Oh.
And it got made by a wonderful artist, wonderful dressmaker who makes costumes for the Victorian Opera and the MTC. And I found her via a friend. And yeah, it's awesome. That'll be fun.
What do you call it?
If nothing less, come for the suit, stay for the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you've piqued all of our interest now. But what's a nudie suit?
Nudie suit's a white suit. Graham Parsons, in the 60s, he was in the Birds. Was he in the Birds? Yeah. Was he in the Birds?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Yes, Graham Parsons, a country rock artist, famously wore a nudie suit. It's like a white bottoms and white tops, and there's like pictures of flowers and things on the suit itself.
Right, got you.
And hearts. Yeah, it's a bit country rock vibe.
I like it.
I got a white suit made, but I got the iconography that was from the record, and I've had that embossed on there, and there's the big, beautiful sunset is on the back of me, and yeah, there's some beautiful embroidery and rhinestones, and holy shit, it's awesome.
I love the sound of this.
Esther Hayes is an artist, and yeah, I'm supposed to go over and have a fitting today to see if my COVID kilos are going to impact on my if the suit needs taking out.
I feel that pain. And the rest of the year, what do we have in store after these shows have calmed down and you've hung up the nudie suit?
Well, the nudie suit might get a running out of Boogie Fest in Melbourne, which is a festival out just outside of Melbourne in Tullaroook.
Okay.
Which is like prime nudie suit country.
Oh, good.
And then we've got some On the Quiet shows booked just in and around Melbourne late May, early June, where we pair it back, put the electric guitars away and get to hear a direct, more homespun version of our songs.
Mm.
And, yes, we've got those shows. I think we're booking them now. There's a show in Anglesey, a show in Castlemaine, a show in Melbourne, and a show in Neenan.
Dave from Augie March, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. Congratulations on 20 or 22 years since the release of your debut album, Sunset Studies. You're on the Music Weekly on Energy Groove Radio. If you want to listen back to that chat with Dave from Augie March, hit up our website, go to energy-groove.com. Let's hear from Augie March now. This is a track lifted from their debut album, dropped in the year 2000. This is There Is No Such Place. I urge you to check out the full album, give it a stream, give it a purchase, do what you need to do to get your ears around it, because it truly is a timeless masterpiece and a perfect example of exceptional Australian songwriting.
There is no such place. Oh yes, I've seen it too. Just a little different from my dew. A river wine blue among the dunes, and the marble bay, the sun that doesn't set but settles. There is no such place. If I love mine to yours, might you kiss me on the face? If you're looking for an unmarked place, there is no such place. Blasted in appearance and the composite of fearful minutes, frozen in the waking instant. Just a can upon the sill to catch your tears.